You're traveling through another podcast. A podcast not only of reviewing and discussing, but of discovery. A journey into a wondrous show whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the RSS feed up ahead. Your next stop, Anthology.
Hello and welcome to Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and if this is your first time listening, Anthology is one man's examination of the Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer. Each podcast, I share my first impressions, analysis, and overall thoughts on Rod Serling's iconic series, one episode at a time. I also cover modern anthology science fiction shows such as Black Mirror and the Jordan Peele-produced Twilight Zone reboot in bonus episode review series. I also end each episode of the main feed of the podcast with a bonus review of an episode of science fiction theater, the kind of prototype or proto Twilight Zone. I don't know if that's necessarily accurate. The grandfather of sci-fi anthology shows, I guess. You can find more of Anthology as well as a full episode archive at anthologypod.com. And if you want to contact me, you can use the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod, tweet me at @OVAnthologyPod, or send an email to matt@obsessiveviewer.com. Today on the podcast, I'm going to be discussing The Mind and the Matter. It's the 27th episode of The Twilight Zone's second season, and it originally aired on May 12th, 1961. And I will be rounding out the episode with a brief review of Science Fiction Theater Season 1, Episode 8, Spider Inc. If you have listened to the last few episodes of the podcast, the main feed of the podcast, I should say, so there's been a hiatus. I'm back from the hiatus and all that. I covered that in the special episode I just released. But in those past episodes, when covering Science Fiction Theater, I had found a YouTube account that had uploaded pretty much the full episodes of most episodes of Science Fiction Theater. That account no longer exists, so if you want to check out Science Fiction Theater, you can buy the complete series DVD set on Amazon. I'll put a link in the show notes, like an Amazon affiliate link, so if you go into the show notes of the episode and click on that link and buy it, I'll get a little kickback from Amazon for it. So yeah. Unfortunately, that appears to be the only way that you can watch Science Fiction Theater. But I do enjoy the show, and I think that it may be worth blind buying on Amazon. I say that having not knowing how much it actually costs on Amazon right now. Let me actually check real quick. Well, on Amazon, it is currently unavailable. Crap. I don't know. It may be available in some other way, but right now it seems that there's no way to buy Science Fiction Theater or see it. So sorry about that. Okay, and I just looked at Shout Factory's website, which is the distributor for Science Fiction Theater, the DVD set, and it is not available. It's sold out, and as of October of 2019, it is officially out of print, so I'm sorry. But I did find that there is a website, dailymotion.com, where you can watch the full episodes. I'll start putting links to those episodes in the show notes of the episodes that I cover it. So anyway, so that's what I'm going to be doing today on the podcast. And before I get to that, I do want to mention some news and updates. Really just one thing, one kind of interesting thing that I discovered a year ago. Back when last year I bought the DVD set of Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which was a TNT, anthology show based on the work of Stephen King. Desperately want that to exist again. I want an episodic anthology show based on the short stories of Stephen King, solely those short stories. But something interesting about that, the way it connects to the Twilight Zone, is that the first episode of Nightmares and Dreamscapes was an episode titled Battleground, which Battleground is based on a short story from, I believe it's Night Shift, Stephen King's first short story collection. And what's interesting is that Battleground, the episode of Nightmares and Dreamscapes. It aired July 12th, 2006. It was written, the teleplay was written by Richard Christian Matheson, Richard Matheson's son. And it pays homage to the Invaders in that it has no dialogue and is about a man who is a person who is under threat of being murdered by miniature figures. Compared to him, really interesting. I just got a huge kick out of that. Like when I saw Richard Christian Matheson's name in the opening credits, I was like, oh wow, this is, I'm in for something. And I was just delighted by that. That's really all the news and updates I have, 'cause I did cover a bit, over on the special episode. I do want to mention that I made two guest appearances on Twilight Zone podcast during the hiatus that I took. In September, I was a guest on Between Science and Superstition. Dan and Anna were great. I had a lot of fun talking to them, just kind of chatting about the Twilight Zone and about... I'm blanking on the name of the show. The Netflix show... oh my God. Why can't I think of that? Anyway, it's, 13 Reasons Why. Kind of griped about that. it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun on, to be on their podcast, and they're great. And also, if you go to their website is freaking gorgeous. Like, they have one of the best, like, websites, like, designed. I'm super jealous of it. But anyway, check that out, Between Science and Superstition. I had a lot of fun. They're a great podcast and a great pair of people. And they're a lot of fun to chat with. And they have a lot of great stuff. Not just Twilight Zone, but they have other like movie reviews and stuff that's a lot of fun. So check them out, Between Science and Superstition. It's BSAS.com, I believe. Link in the show notes. And also, just a few days after that, I made a guest appearance on Submitted for Your Approval. I believe it's my third guest appearance on Brandon's show, Submitted for Your Approval. Had a lot of fun chatting with Brandon. We reviewed the season 3 episode of The Twilight Zone, Still Valley. So if you want to get ahead of me here and hear my thoughts on that, check that out. A lot of fun, always a lot of fun to chat with Brandon, and yeah, and I really enjoyed the kind of new format of the show that he does compared to my last appearance on the show. So it was a lot of fun to chat with him and everything. It's always a good time to share time to fellow Twilight Zone podcasters. Okay, so... on to this episode of Anthology. I'm going to read a spoiler-heavy plot summary of The Mind and the Matter. So, of course, if you haven't seen The Mind and the Matter, go ahead and watch it and then come back and listen to this review. I'm going to read the plot summary that's going to spoil the entire episode, courtesy of The Twilight Zone, Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic by Martin Grahams Jr. Also, totally forgot to mention, backing up a little bit, Martin Grahams Jr., recently released a book similar to his Unlocking the Door to Television Classic Twilight Zone book and his science fiction theater book. He did one for Way Out, which was a little scene, I think Roald Dahl sci-fi anthology show. I grabbed it. I'm excited to read it, and I think the episodes are lost, but I'm really excited to just dive in and see what kind of show existed once in this realm of science fiction anthology shows. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And on to my plot summary of The Mind and the Matter. Mr. Beechcroft, an employee of the Park Central Insurance Company, is tired of being pushed around by society. Every day he rides crowded subways, is herded into the elevator like cattle, and having people spill fluids on his clothes. When a friend hands Beechcroft a book titled The Mind and the Matter, How You Can Achieve the Ultimate Power of Concentration, it takes Beechcroft only a few hours to read the contents. Applying wisdom from within the pages, he uses concentration and underrated power of the universe to get rid of the people who annoy him. Late one evening, he uses his power to cause his landlady to vanish. When he succeeds, he concentrates on eliminating all the people in the world. Now the ride on the subway train is not crowded, and the office where he works is peaceful and quiet. So quiet that Beechcroft finds himself so quiet that Beechcroft finds himself resorting to folding paper airplanes by the end of the day. While he enjoys the luxury of peace, he is bored to death. With the still emptiness preying on him, he decides to focus his concentration on people he can stand, people like himself. He succeeds in populating a world full of Archibald Beechcrofts, but since he hated people, he now has to live in a world where that hates everyone else. Putting everything back the way it was, Beechcroft realizes that if he had the chance to change anything, he wouldn't be more content. So, The Mind and the Matter stars Shelley Berman as Archibald Beechcroft. This was his only episode of The Twilight Zone. He did a lot of guest appearances on TV from the 60s up until the 2000s. He had a recurring role on the show Boston Legal as a judge, and he appeared in a total of 13 Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes. Co-starring as Henry is Jack Greenidge. This is his only Twilight Zone episode, and he also appeared in 18 episodes of Kolchak the Night Stalker, which I believe Richard Matheson worked on the original TV movie for that. And he also appeared in Rebel Without a Cause and a couple episodes of Scrubs. And rounding out the cast as Mr. Rogers is Chet Stratton. This is his first of two Twilight Zone episodes, with his next appearance being in miniature in season 4 of the podcast, or of the show. Wow. And he also appeared in one episode of One Step Beyond called The Stonecutter. One Step Beyond, of course, is also available on Amazon Prime to check out. It's pretty solid. Writer for this episode was Rod Serling. I couldn't find much information about it except that he, had written it with, he had offered it to Shelley Berman, as if he had written for him. I think he originally wanted someone else, to take the role, but then he took it to Shelley Berman, and he took it. Director for this episode was Buzz Kulik. This is his fifth of 9 Twilight Zone episodes. The most recent one we saw from him is 100 Yards Over the Rim, and next we'll see from him is A Game of Pool in Season 3. So, what I knew before going into this episode, I knew nothing. The title makes me think of Mind Over Matter, which could mean anything, really. And I had noticed that the cover image on Amazon Prime had a man with his back to a mirror reflection looking at him. I obviously found out during the episode that it wasn't a mirror. It was more just a board, a chart. And it just reminded me of Nervous Man in a $4 Room from earlier in the season. I got that vibe there. So, all right, so let me go into my review. Here is a clip from the episode. This is Rod Serling with his opening narration for The Mind and the Matter.
A brief, if frenetic, introduction to Mr. Archibald Beechcroft, a child of the 20th century, a product of the population explosion, and one of the inheritors of the legacy of progress. Mr. Beechcroft again. This time, Act 2 of his daily battle for survival. And in just a moment, our hero will begin his personal one-man rebellion against the mechanics of his age. And to do so, he will enlist certain aids available only in the Twilight Zone.
Okay, so the first thing that I noticed right off the bat when we see Archibald Beechcroft on the train is... and then in the elevator is the way that Shelley Berman plays the character. Like, he has this look of just pure disgust and resentment that is like dialed up to 11 right off the bat. And he does such a great job just emoting that feeling, throughout the entire episode, but especially in those opening scenes to give us a live look at the character. The other thing I noticed is that Archibald Beechcroft, that name is amazing. there's no analytical thing for this part of it. I just want to share my appreciation for a great character name in the Twilight Zone. Archibald Beechcroft. Really good. So, we see him at the office. Henry spills coffee on him, and, I just really like Shelley Berman's performance. Like, when he sits down and he's kind of exasperated, he takes off his glasses and just kind of like puts his head in his hands. I that's just simple, emotion from an incident that isn't like a life defining incident or anything. It's just like a minor inconvenience, and like it's very much emoting that it's just ruined his day. It's thrown his day off from a point where he has already been thrown off just from his general disposition toward the world. So I just like that, like, slight kind of elevation to his frustration for the day. Then we get the scene in the bathroom where he is just still kind of exasperated, and then Mr. Rogers, who I don't think it's necessarily clear. I don't know if Mr. Rogers is supposed to be his boss or just a coworker or colleague, but I kind of get the sense that he's like upper level, like he's above Beechcroft. But what I really liked about this scene between the two is that Mr. Rogers is very he's very persistent and almost to the point of being just slightly invasive, just talking about how Beechcroft needs to, you know, be healthy and everything, and talking about how, like, he needs to get his sleep, and being healthy isn't just a personal thing. It's also an extension of his role within the company, and just throwing that kind of corporate BS at him to keep him, like, in line, essentially. But Beechcroft's response to is kind of delightful in a weird, morbid way. He goes off on a rant, and we can tell as the audience that we can tell that he is having a bit of a mental breakdown of sorts. But he says that if I had my way, here's how I'd fix the universe. I would get rid of all the people. And he goes on to talk about how he would just eliminate the entire human race. And there's something to Shelley Berman's performance that it's very much this perturbed charm. Like, it's this thing where he is obviously perturbed, and like there's a read of this episode and of this character that is much darker than what we got. But Shelley Berman plays it kind of to a comedic stance just slightly, and it comes across as more empathetic, and we're more empathetic to his plight as Archibald Beechcroft than we are afraid of him erasing the human race. But I kind of cracked up a few times after I watched this for the first time, but I kind of cracked up because I kind of thought, like, what if Beechcroft works in an insurance company. I work at an insurance company. What if I was in the bathroom, or I was talking to like one of my managers and was like, I just want to get rid of the entire human race. I want all of the people to just be gone. Everyone to just be completely erased from the universe. I would get in trouble. I would have some calls from HR and everything. Like, I just thought of that, like, how just deranged does that, just in terms of just the dialogue, make him sound? And to contextualize that in a modern office space and in the real world is really kind of humorous to me. It made me laugh. So what I really like about kind of this episode has, for the most part, this episode is fine. I'll go ahead and say that. Spoiler for later in this review, but it's fine. But what I really like about it is that it really does a great job of demonstrating just how closed in everything is for Beechcroft. Like, there's a scene later where, like, the second scene where he's on the train the next day after he gets the book. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I'll get back to that in a bit. That scene is a much tighter scene. It's zoomed in on him. It's very much more crowded than the opening scene. And this kind of very closed in and aggravating, like, limited personal space for Beechcroft is what I should say. The limited personal space that Beechcroft has is prevalent throughout the entire episode up until he erases everyone. And I really appreciate that, like, the kind of structure and the care of that. Like, when he's in the lunchroom, he's like fighting through like a crowd to get to the table and everything. And it's just like little things like that really kind of exemplify the tone that they're trying to strike with this episode. It's comedic, but it's also just at its heart about a character who is a misanthrope and, just hates people. he has a very curmudgeonly perspective on the world. So the actual lunch scene where Henry gives him the book as kind of an apology for spilling coffee on him, The Mind and the Matter, How You Can Achieve the Ultimate Power of Concentration. I love, again, Beechcroft, like Shelley Berman's his performance is incredible. Like, there's this long gaze that Beechcroft gives to Henry when he's given the book. And in that moment, it's like probably, like, all told, it's probably 3 or 4 seconds, if that. But it's this gaze that he gives to him where it's like he's trying to understand what's happening. Like, this coworker or assistant or what have you has just gifted him an object. And it's almost like Beechcroft can't compute human kindness. And I really appreciate that. It's like, it's kind of like this, I don't want to say animalistic, but like this reaction to it where it's like he's wary of it, like he hates people, but like this person just did something nice for him, and it's like he's trying to figure out, like, okay, what's the angle here? Like, why, like, I'm like, my entire personality and my entire stance on everything is that I hate people, but this people just gave me something that is kind. But I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that single gaze, but I really kind of appreciate that kind of long stare that Beechcroft gives. And we get right from the immediately in Henry's response that this is our object. This is our magical object for this episode of The Twilight Zone. Henry says that it's he believes it's the only copy in existence, and that he, like, saw it. He saw his friend kind of manipulate, like, use concentration to cause a woman to buy a product and everything. So we get a very light kind of, like, build up or light setup for the actual book, which I'm fine with. We don't need an extended, like, long-winded thing, and we don't need a bunch of rules and everything. It's just, it's a book, and he's going to read it. And so, As we get more scenes with Beechcroft reading the book, he's going through kind of his daily routine that we previously saw in the episode, but this time he's reading the book and he's more engaged by it. And I just want to say, first of all, I just want to say right here that the music in this episode, I didn't do my due diligence. I don't know what kind of music it is. I don't know if it's stock music or what have you, but it kind of works over time to present the episode as a comedic type of episode. And I kind of appreciate that, because without that tone, it could seem a little bit convoluted as far as what tone they're trying to strike, because it's a man who wants to erase everyone. And without Shelley Berman being a good comedic presence and the score being very much kind of energetic in a comedic sense, we could be kind of lost there. Like, this could have been a very dark episode, but it is more lighthearted than other episodes in the Twilight Zone canon. So I get to the, I'm now at the scene where where he's in the train. And I just love how more constricted and claustrophobic it is, and the tighter frame of it is really great. And so then he's back home, he's reading the book, and it's like he's coming around to it. I like this underlying thing that, like, my read of this episode is that it's kind of like the entire episode is like an indictment against self-help books. I kind of like that. That's kind of turns out to be kind of a running thing throughout the episode. And so the actual concept of him being able to concentrate hard enough to get rid of everyone, it feels a bit like a riff on, say, Time Enough at Last, where he's a character who is getting rid of everyone, or everyone has disappeared and he's now bored and everything. Same with Where Is Everybody? It's kind of a common theme throughout the Twilight Zone, where we have, like, a single character who is experiencing loneliness or isolation. And that's something that I'm appreciating the way that it is, the way that it's coming into focus throughout the episodes and throughout the season and the series as a whole. I think it's interesting that each iteration of the kind of isolated storyline of a single character being isolated is unique. Each one is unique. Like, I'm thinking of Okay, so time enough at last. Where is everybody? King Nine will not return. Nervous Man in a $4 room. Bunch of episodes where it's just like a single character or single characters who are just isolated and alone. And I like that as a running theme throughout the Twilight Zone canon. So then we get the scene where he is, he gets rid of the landlord. And it doesn't take much. He just concentrates and she's gone. And I feel like, I don't know if the Twilight Zone reboot from 2019, I don't know if CBS All Access's Twilight Zone was intending to do a riff on this, or if they use this as a influence for the comedian episode, but it does feel like maybe the comedian was paying homage to this episode to an extent. So he gets rid of the landlady, the landlord, and he says, today the landlady, tomorrow the world. And I really like Shelley Berman's read of that line. It's a very fun read where he's like, it's almost comedic and lighthearted, but also carries this vaguely sinister feel where he's just like, I'm going to try to do an imitation of him. He says, today the landlady, tomorrow the world. And it's just like, it's not like this sinister thing per se, but it's, like I said, it's vaguely sinister, but it's more like he's just tickled with himself that he can like do this and that he's so excited about it. And it's, I don't know, it's really interesting. And at this point in my first viewing of it, I was kind of thinking like, okay, is he insane? Like irredeemably insane? Or is this a lighthearted episode? Even though the score and kind of the tone of a lot of the scenes have been comedic, at this point I kind of felt like, is this going to turn into a more sinister, like dark episode? And so I kind of felt like I was juggling between those two tones throughout at this moment in the episode. So the next morning, we get the train station scene, and he makes everyone disappear. Kind of, this isn't really relevant per se, because I don't think M. Night Shyamalan really, like, took inspiration from this episode, but it's interesting that he's a man who has this superpower, and he utilizes it in a train station, or discovers it, or uses it to its full potential in a train station, and that's kind of a similar kind of thing that happened with Unbreakable, M. Night Shyamalan's 2000 movie. I don't know if he was influenced by that or it's just a coincidence, but it's, I guess, worth mentioning, I guess. I don't know. So not only does he get rid of everyone on the planet, but he can control things with his mind. And again, it's an interesting rift on Time Enough at Last and Where is Everybody? What I found interesting, and it's nitpicking, and I'm not criticizing it or anything, but just the fact that he still goes to work, it's an interesting concept to have him erase everyone on the planet. There are so much more fun things to do with you as the only person in existence. But he goes to work at an insurance company and still does his work. I thought that was, an interesting, I doubt that I had anything to do with budget limitations or anything, but I kind of feel like, I don't know if this is the intention of Serling, but kind of feels like this guy is so empty and so he's just so morose and, misanthropic and everything that even with like the world is his, literally the world is his oyster. He is an omnipotent being on the planet, where he is the only person on the planet, and he goes to work. And I think that is an interesting reflection to just how empty his life is and how miserable he is as just a human being. So when he's at work, we get some interesting stuff there. The shot of the empty alley is really great and kind of ominous. It kind of, really kind of displays like how empty everything is, how alone he is. And the sound design in this episode is really great. Like there, these kind of the sound design, the soundtrack of the episode, where when it's all crowded and everyone is all just like puttering by him and everything and crowding, Beechcroft, the sound design is very cacophonous and it's very just, like, very bombastic. But now that everyone's gone and everything, it's completely silent, and you can kind of just hear just how he's walking along and everything. And it's, I don't know, just, I really appreciate the sound design there. And again, if I erased everyone from the planet, not that I want to, but if I erased everyone from the planet, I would have zero incentive to go to work. Like, zero. So then we get another kind of riff on a past episode. He is alone and everything, and he's now kind of rethinking his situation. And this is when he starts talking to himself through the glasses lenses and then on the chart behind him and everything. It's a reflection of him that he's talking to. And it just reminded me a lot of Nervous Man in a $4 Room. Not that it's a complaint at all, because there's no real way to really do that without making it not that interesting. Like, thinking of, like, King Nine Will Not Return, we had the voiceover from the main character as he's thinking about, like, where his crew is and everything, and, like, that's fine, but I think this works a little bit better for this episode and Nervous Man in a $4 Room, obviously. For this episode, it's an interesting kind of reflection of what he's thinking, in the fact that it's coming from him, like an alternate version of him or a reflected version of him, is more in touch with who he is as a character. Because this is a very centralized episode where it's about this man who hates everything and confronting how miserable he is in kind of a fun, lighthearted way. And also, I really like the way that they did the effects of projecting him in the glasses lenses and on the chart and everything. It's a very much varied effect. And it's just a really cool, effect as it goes through. And it's varied. I like that. So he kind of doubles down on his misanthropy, and he talks about how, it's boring and everything. And his voice in the reflections is trying to kind of goad him into into just, like, admitting that he needs people. But then he doubles down on his misanthropy in that he says that he's, like, he's trying to convince his reflection, his inner monologue personified in a reflection, that he's content with everything. And so we get a couple of instances of him trying to beat the boredom, and he, like, conjures an earthquake out of boredom. He just says, like, oh, how about an earthquake to liven things up? And that's a cool effect. I like the kind of shaking effect and everything. And then he asks for a nice little electrical storm. And honestly, that's probably the first thing I would do. I just love thunderstorms so much. There's something about thunderstorms that kind of calms me in a weird way. And so he's continuing his boredom. This instance where he is at the train station and he draws a mustache on a perfume model, poster. It was on a, I don't know how to say it. It was a little lame. It didn't do anything for me. I kind of feel like there could have been something better for him to do to express his boredom and everything. It's just kind of childish and juvenile. Maybe that was the intention, and if so, then yeah, it worked. But it kind of just felt like just kind of silly in a way that the episode wasn't necessarily conveying its silliness. Like, it was on a level of silliness that was higher than the rest of the episode's tone. Yeah. So then he's really lonely. And that's when he decides to create a world of Archibald Beechcrofts. And, oh man, like, he populates the world with himself. And first of all, the effects or the masks that are used were creepy as all hell. Like, I was super creeped out. And just in those few frames where we see people with, like, Archibald Beechcroft masks on, it was just super creepy and just unsettling. But then we get the him dressed up in drag, and that's when we get one of our first indications that not only has he created a world of Beechcrofts, but a world of Beechcrofts that are complete misanthropes and hate everything. And it's so, like, revealing of his character. Like, this is, as I said, this episode is kind of, it's overall kind of okay, but here, like, when we get this character who is so, like, has so much, not, I don't know if I would necessarily say hate, but he just despises human beings. Like, he hates people. He doesn't like people. He's a misanthrope. And to see him just populate the world with people that he does like and he likes himself, and then have that turn so much out of his favor, is such a, like, monkey's paw-esque kind of reveal. And it's something that I love about the Twilight Zone. It's another extension of the way that narcissism and ego is written into the Twilight Zone. And it's such a natural progression for this character. Like, obviously he's going to create a world of himself, because he is someone who reveres himself as a person and hates everyone else. Yet I did not even fathom that that's where this episode was going to go. I had no idea that this is where the episode was going to go. And I really liked that surprise. And compounding that surprise with the woman version of Beechcroft and the very creepy masked extras, it was just a really interesting, like, moment for this episode and a nice reveal. And then we get the, like, realization that everyone is like him in personality as well. And, like, he was the newspaper man who's, like, talking about how everyone is a thief or whatever. And then he was in the elevator. Like, all of that was great. I loved it so much. And it's just an extension of how he hates everyone and thinks he'll be happy in a world filled with himself. But it's giving him a mirror to who he is and how he's perceived as well. I think that that's a really interesting dynamic to strike in this episode, is that this is a man who thinks that he's better than everyone. He's a person that thinks that he's the one person that knows how to person. And he is having that just thrown in his face. Like, he's given the opportunity, the Twilight Zone itself has given him the opportunity to see how he behaves, how he acts toward other people. It develops this empathy within him. And that's something that I found just fascinating, because we have, like obviously as human beings, we have this, we should in general have this ability to empathize with other people, but there are certain people, some in positions of power, that lack this empathetic, like, trait. And to see this episode kind of explore that idea in such a unique and kind of lighthearted way, I felt was really just astounding, honestly. Even though the episode itself just worked just fine for me, I do think that element of it was something that really, really helped me appreciate it, and is another extension of Serling just being a genius. It's amazing. So he has enough of this and he just changes everything back. And I love this. Like, I love this last scene of the episode, is that everything's back to normal and Henry spills the coffee on him again. And it's just, I love the growth of the character. I love that he is a character who, like I had questions of before, he's not irredeemable. He is a redeemable character. And this growth that he experiences throughout the episode is this just natural, like, character development. And I just love how he's more pleasant, and a lot of credit goes to Shelley Berman, because he plays that so well. And he plays this just pleasant version of himself, despite having 20 minutes of us seeing him being a miserable human being. And that switch is just, it's just a really good performance. And I really appreciated the episode for that. And really, that's about it for this episode. Wow. We got Serling's closing narration. And I'll play a clip from it here in a second, but I just want to say that I like that the closing narration is this kind of note of optimism, and it plays into the kind of lighthearted, comedic comedic kind of tone for the episode. So here's Serling's closing narration for The Mind and the Matter.
Mr. Archibald Beechcroft, a child of the 20th century, who has found out through trial and error, and mostly error, that with all its faults, it may well be that this is the best of all possible worlds. People notwithstanding, it has much to offer. Tonight's case in point, in the Twilight Zone.
All right, and just a like closing thought before I go to trivia and everything, the credit frame over the ending credits is of Beechcroft's glasses, and I feel like that's another kind of homage to Time Enough at Last. As far as trivia, I could not find hardly anything about this. Like, even Martin Grahams Jr.'s book doesn't really go into much detail about the episode itself. The only thing I could really find was on the DVD, there is a commentary track from Berman, and he talks about how Serling called him and told him that he wanted to write an episode of Twilight Zone for him. Now, Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic has a different take on that. Apparently, Serling had written or wanted someone else involved in the Twilight Zone, and then when that person backed out, he contacted Berman, and I think he reworked a script for him. But the other kind of piece of trivia that I have is that the idea to have Beechcroft as a woman in the elevator was Shelley Berman's idea, and I think that worked really well. It's a nice surprise and a fun surprise for the episode. So yeah, that's my review of The Mind and the Matter. Like I said, overall, it's a pretty good episode. I kind of, going into this review, I was kind of just, I don't know. I was a little on the fence about it, and I think talking it through for this podcast has been something that kind of opened my eyes to some of the brilliance at play in this episode. So I think I'm going to come away from this review having gained a much bigger appreciation for this episode than I had before recording. So that's where I stand on The Mind and the Matter. All right, so as usual, I'm going to close out this episode with a bonus review of an episode of Science Fiction Theater. This week's episode of Science Fiction Theater is Season 1, Episode 8, Spider Inc. Okay, Spider Inc. was an episode of Science Fiction Theater that aired on May 28th, 1955. As I said earlier in the episode, the YouTube account that I've been using to share links to full episodes is gone now. So I'll put links to the Daily Motion links where you can watch these episodes for now. Hopefully the DVD set gets back in print again, because it's an interesting piece of television history. And I would like more people to see it so I can talk about it more and talk about it with you guys more. So this episode stars, Gene Barry as Joe Ferguson and Audrey Totter as his wife Ellie Ferguson. This is interesting. So it also has Ludwig Stossel as Mr. Rogers. Kind of an interesting coincidence that this episode of Science Fiction Theater has a Mr. Rogers character, as well as The Mind and the Matter had a Mr. Rogers. Director for this episode was Jack Arnold, and writer for it was Jerry Sackheim. So the kind of synopsis for this episode is: a scientist thinks he can use a 50 million year old piece of amber with a spider encased within to produce synthetic oil. The pre-show with host Truman Bradley, the pre-show of it just was about radiation and how every room has radiation on a minuscule level, and the kind of the machine or the scientific thing that was used as a demonstration was a carbon dating machine, which came into play in the episode. Spider Inc. It was good. It was a charming episode. Something that struck me about it, like I said, it was aired in 1955. We get this kind of idyllic home life, like the classic 50s kind of marriage thing where like a man is married to a woman, and it's just like this idyllic kind of 50s era representation of a household. And what I found interesting about that was that she, like, the conflict between them is that the husband keeps buying things for scientific experiments and everything, and she just discovered that she's pregnant, and he needs to put away scientific things and earn income for their family. That's the main conflict, and I thought that was interesting that in a 50s TV show we had something that was as I don't want to say dark, but as heavy a conflict as that in a kind of 50s piece of television. Because my interpretation of like 50s TV, especially like more geared toward just kind of general audience, like more getting as many, hitting all four quadrants and everything, is that like, okay, we have this happy couple and everything, and just having the conflict between them be something so, frankly, so universal to an extent, or so relatable to actual audiences, is interesting, as I always kind of perceived 50s television as being an escape. But the actual content of the episode, the idea of him thinking that this spider encased in amber could be worth millions of dollars, or could be a breakthrough for him, is interesting. I don't, like, it doesn't really go into like the process or how it would be used to produce synthetic oil, but it doesn't really matter. What I do like about it is that it does kind of rubber band back to that idyllic 50s like home life thing. It becomes this very, very sweet story. Like, as the characters kind of come together, like there are other characters, like the person who sold him the spider and business partners and scientists and stuff. The way that it comes together is this interesting story that it becomes about having faith in someone that you care about, and like helping them achieve what they want to achieve, even if you think that it is completely bonkers, insane. And I really appreciated that. I thought that was a sweet story and a good piece of science fiction television. It's a very, very much, based in reality and kind of like, very, like, it's not a supernatural thing or anything like that, as we've come to see in these episodes of science fiction theater, that's much more grounded than, other shows like it. But I really appreciated it. I thought it was sweet. Maybe not the strongest episode of science fiction theater yet, but, pretty sweet in its own right and pretty, pretty charming. Yeah, and I guess that'll do it. That is my review of Spider Inc. From Science Fiction Theater. Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes, of course. Yeah, so next up on the podcast, I'm back. This is me. I'm resurfacing, and I'm back after another long hiatus. The next episode for the main feed will be me reviewing Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up, which is... That is episode 28 from The Twilight Zone Season 2. It's the penultimate episode of Season 2. And for a bonus review attached to that episode, I'm going to be talking about episode 9 from Science Fiction Theater's first season, titled Death at 2 a.m. And before that, I'm going to start my bonus review series of Black Mirror Season 5, so check that out soon. It's good to be back. I'm glad that I'm back. Thank you guys so much for your support and for waiting for me and putting up with me and everything. Yeah, thank you guys. And yeah, we're in a weird time. It's the COVID-19 pandemic and everything. Hope you guys are staying healthy. Hope you guys are staying safe, staying inside and everything. And I hope that my podcasting can help alleviate some of that cabin fever you may be feeling. So glad to be back. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll see you next time. And now, here's a clip from a recent episode of The Obsessive Viewer, a weekly movie and TV podcast from obsessiveviewer.com.
It's weird. It's been a weird sense of, like, my life slowing down a little bit. And I know that parents, when their kids are older, they're always like, man, don't you wish we had them when they were 4 and 2 again for a little longer? And I'm like, I'm getting that time with them that you wish to have later on. So
that is, holy shit. That's a really good perspective to have on it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah.
And I mean, me,
I don't mean to make light. I know people are having a hard time with it, but
I was just about to make the joke that I've got the time of like my 4-year-old cat now.
These are the years we cherish most with our cats.
Anthology is edited and produced by Matt Hurt and presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For a full archive of our episodes, go to anthologypod.com/archive. You can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod and follow the show on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. If you enjoy the show, please take a couple minutes to leave us a rating and a quick review on Apple Podcasts. This is the easiest way to support what we do, and all it costs is a little bit of your time. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can make a PayPal donation at anthologypod.com/donate or support us on Patreon for recurring donations and access to commentary tracks and B-roll audio recorded exclusively for patrons at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Every donation goes toward paying the fees to keep the podcast running and is greatly appreciated. Official Anthology merch, including shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more, can be found in the Obsessive Viewers TeePublic store. You can find a link to the store in the show notes of this episode and at anthologypod.com/donate. Or you can simply search for Obsessive Viewer at teepublic.com. For information about the Obsessive Viewers annual live event showcasing short horror films from local filmmakers, check out shocktoberinirvington.com. And for an archive of all our events, as well as news about potential future events, head over to obsessiveviewer.com/live. For more podcast content, you can find our flagship movie and TV review and discussion show, The Obsessive Viewer Podcast, at obsessiveviewer.com and on Twitter at @obsessiveviewer. You can also find Tower Junkies, a podcast where Matt and co-host Tiny share their love of all things Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower series, over at towerjunkiespod.com and at towerjunkiespod on Twitter. And finally, check out The Secular Perspective, Tiny's side project podcast, which tackles current events and life's big questions from the perspective of secular hosts Chad and Amanda at thesecularperspective.com. Bumper music for this podcast comes courtesy of As Good As It Gets, which can be found at facebook.com/asgoodasitgetsband. You can also find As Good As It Gets music on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Kitty!
Mind over matter. Today, the landlady. Tomorrow, the world.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.